This is The Guardian.
I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story. COVID-19 tests and vaccines are about to change in Australia.
TGA has approved the use of Pfizer as a COVID-19 booster for Australians 18 plus.
Rapid antigen testing and booster shots are being added to the next phase of our pandemic response.
This is an important step, and it will mean that Australia will be one of the most highly vaccinated societies in the world.
So, how do they work? And just how effective are they? Today, the science behind rapid antigen testing and booster shots. It's Tuesday, the 9th of November. Samil, it does really feel like right now, especially for people in Australia's two most densely populated states, New South Wales and Victoria, we're kind of in a different stage of the pandemic, the post-lockdown stage, and hopefully we'll be progressing forward in a post-lockdown world, right?
Yeah, that's right. We're living with COVID. We are pushing vaccination. We're watching while states like Western Australia are a little bit more slow to vaccinate and open their borders. So it kind of feels like, as a country, we're at different stages as well.
Melissa Davey is Guardian Australia's medical editor.
But we'll have to see how that plays out over the next few months.
Mm. What's this stage look like for you at the moment?
Oh, going to the pub. Cycling home from the pub on a summer night. It's those little things that I've really missed. So, yeah, I'm very relieved.
So in this new and kind of COVID normal stage, there are a lot of changes coming, maybe semi-permanent changes to our lives. And just one of them is the way that we're going to be able to test for COVID going forward. Firstly, can you tell me, what is a rapid antigen test, Mel?
Yeah, so it still involves a swab, and the swab, it goes up your nose, but it's meant to be a little bit less invasive than the PCR test that you would have probably done before if you've gone to a testing clinic or to your GP.
Many times, yes.
Yes, we've all done them many times, particularly if you're living in a state that's had lots of COVID. So they're a bit less invasive. And the PCR test is usually administered by a doctor or nurse who takes the swab of your nose and your throat, and then those tests go to a lab. So that's why it can take a while to get the results, especially if you are in an area with high levels of COVID and high levels of testing. There's a lot of tests to get through. So you might get your test, you know, perhaps the same day if you're lucky, but maybe 24, 48 hours later.
Mm.
But rapid antigen tests involve self-performing the test with a nasal swab. It's a smaller cotton bud that's placed into a chemical solution. So you can do it at home, and the result displays within about 10 to 15 minutes. So it's very quick. And these rapid antigen tests did actually have to be supervised or performed by health professionals previously. But recently, the government has approved these tests for self-administration. So you can buy them and use them at home.
Mm. Where can you actually buy them from?
Technically, they're allowed to be sold anywhere, everything from petrol stations to online, supermarkets, pharmacies, and they cost about $30 to $100 and come in packs of 2 to 5. So there is quite a significant cost to them when you consider that the PCR tests that we're used to are free. They're covered by Medicare, but you can do them yourself and do it at home.
So more expensive, but a shorter swab. It's not going all the way up to your brain. I mean, some people would pay good money for that.
So having said that, the PCR tests have improved a little bit as well, and they're a little bit less harsh. So the tests are improving all the time. But yes, these rapid antigen tests aren't quite as invasive.
How effective is a rapid antigen test compared to the PCR test?
So PCR tests, they're the gold standard for diagnosis still. They can diagnose COVID-19 even in very early stages of the virus, so sometimes even before someone feels unwell. And they detect the virus accurately 100% of the time nearly. So if it's administered properly, if you do the nasal swab and the throat swab properly for the right amount of time, then they're really accurate. Meanwhile, the rapid antigen tests are most useful for detecting the virus when someone has a high viral load. So that just means when someone is at the peak of the virus, when there's a lot of the virus in their system. And it's not as effective when people aren't at that point of the virus. So maybe they've just been exposed, or maybe they're coming to the end of their illness. And that's when you have a higher risk of a false positive result or a false negative result. The different manufacturers of the tests will make different claims about how effective they are, but scientists from the Cochrane Institute, which is a medical research institute, looked at a whole range of different studies that examined how effective these tests are at detecting COVID-19. And they found that overall, the rapid antigen tests correctly identified the virus in an average of about 72% of people with symptoms and in about 58% of people without symptoms. And so they really were most accurate when used in the first week after symptoms developed. So, you know, as we were talking about before, when that higher viral load in the body develops. The rapid antigen tests are pretty good, though, at ruling out an infection when you don't have the virus. So in people who didn't have COVID-19, the rapid antigen tests correctly ruled out the infection in almost 100% of people who had symptoms, and similar in people without symptoms. So you're more likely to get a false negative than a false positive. Basically, if you don't have the virus, whether you've got symptoms or not, so, you know, you might have symptoms that you think are COVID, but they're actually maybe a cold or hay fever or something like that, the antigen tests are really accurate at confirming that you don't have the virus. Their efficacy drops when it comes to confirming that you do have the virus. They're more likely to wrongly say that you don't have it than to wrongly say that you do have it.
Right. So what happens if you get a positive or a negative result from a rapid antigen test then? What should you do?
So I didn't get a response when I asked the different health departments around Australia what people should do if they test positive from a rapid antigen test. But the New South Wales Health Department did say that there's no requirement, as far as they're concerned, to formally report the result of a rapid antigen test to the health department. The New South Wales Health spokesman did say that people who test positive from a home test really should go to their GP anyway and arrange a PCR test, the test that we're all used to, the one that goes deeper up the nose and down the throat, and that this should be done as soon as possible. And that's because of what we were talking about before, that they're not always accurate and you really just want to confirm it. And if you do get the PCR test through your GP, then it does get reported to the health department as well. So that means that contact tracing can begin and that kind of thing. Meanwhile, if you test negative, the World Health Organization recommends that if you've got symptoms but test negative, then you should follow up with a PCR test to be sure. So again, you know, as soon as possible, go to your doctor, get the gold standard test, and just make sure, because it would be terrible if you had symptoms and you got an inaccurate result telling you that you didn't have COVID.
So either way, if you're feeling sick, it might be better to go and do a PCR test, really. With that in mind, I'm wondering what the point of these tests are. Are they really that useful?
Yeah, so they're useful in some settings. That's important to say from the outset. So rapid antigen tests are already being used in workplaces such as fly-in, fly-out, mining sites, supermarkets, aged care, food distribution centres, especially in states and suburbs with high COVID-19 case numbers and in really high-risk industries. And in these environments, though, these tests are provided for free by the employer. They're not the home tests. You don't have to buy them yourself. They're usually administered daily or each time someone has a shift. And until now, they've been supervised or administered by a health professional. So they're done properly. And really, the more often you're testing, the more likely it is that you're going to avoid one of those false positive or false negative results. So every time you're going to a shift, which could be every single day, you're getting a rapid antigen test. Whereas the ones that we have available to us for home use, they come in packs of two or five. So you're probably not going to be testing every single day.
Yeah, even if they're less accurate or effective, if you're doing them a lot, it's a pretty safe screening tool, it sounds like.
That's a really good point. They're actually not allowed to describe the rapid antigen tests that we use at home as a diagnostic tool. That can only be used by manufacturers of the PCR gold standard tests. The Therapeutic Goods Administration, which regulates medicines and medical devices in Australia, says that the manufacturers of the rapid antigen tests can only describe them as a screening tool. So you can't claim that a rapid antigen test can give you a diagnosis. So, you know, it's important to be clear that they do have use in some settings, particularly workplaces. But for your average person just at home, they're maybe not so useful.
Mm.
One expert I spoke to, Dr. Emma Miller, who's a public health epidemiologist with Flinders University, said to me, well, it is quite difficult to see why you might use a rapid antigen test if you're just someone at home or buying one from the supermarket. First of all, they're quite expensive, as we were talking about before. And the PCR tests are still the most accurate and the best for peace of mind. So if you are feeling unwell and you're about to go visit a sick relative in an aged care facility, for example, you don't really get heaps of reassurance if you test negative from a PCR test. Mm. You would be a little bit worried that it could be a false negative. So if people are going to be in that situation where they're really absolutely relying on these rapid antigen tests at home, it could cause more harm than good if they, you know, make decisions based off an inaccurate or wrong result.
Mm. So if they're only useful in particular settings, why roll them out so broadly? Why have them available at the pharmacy for anyone to go and get?
That is a very good question, Laura. And that was my question when I looked into this, because I thought, well, where will they fit into our broader pandemic response beyond the workplace testing we were talking about? And so I asked the major state and territory health departments how these tests were being incorporated into their pandemic planning. Mm. And the Victorian and WA health departments didn't answer the questions, but a spokesperson for New South Wales Health said that it's part of ongoing planning. So they're still trying to figure out how these tests might fit in. And then a Queensland Department of Health spokesman, when I asked in what situation would the department recommend these home tests are used, they responded that the PCR tests are still the gold standard and still the preferred method of testing. So they didn't recommend home tests in any situation. I guess New South Wales Health did point to one example where they might be needed in that state, and they said that they're working with the Department of Education on what role rapid antigen tests can play in supporting children who may have been exposed to COVID, you know, so that they can safely return to school following a period of isolating at home.
Mm.
Maybe also in particular for those children who can't get vaccinated because at the moment, the vaccine's only recommended for those aged 12 and up.
Mm.
So even then, though, I don't know that they're looking at necessarily people buying their own tests. That would probably be something rolled out by the Department of Health and Education. I imagine that people might take a number of tests over a number of days, but they're still working all of that detail out.
Right, but you can see where it would be helpful to have an easier, less invasive test for kids that could be used going forward when kids are coming back to school, essentially.
Definitely. And we know that viruses spread really quickly and easily throughout schools. And if you have to PCR children all the time and go about it that way, especially as we move towards living with COVID, it's probably not practical. So I could see why rapid antigen tests would have a real use there.
Rapid antigen tests for kids, but not for me, it sounds like.
Not yet.
For the majority of the population, though, are we really just stuck with PCR tests going forward?
I don't think we will be. There is new technology coming out all the time and different types of testing. And even with the rapid antigen tests, as we, you know, start living with COVID, it might be that we don't even require people to be tested all the time if they have symptoms. I don't know. It still remains to be seen. You know, so much changes as this virus goes on. But I don't know that we'll have to live with even yearly PCR tests in the future.
Next, is it time for your booster shot? Samel, another new thing that it seems like will become part of our lives going forward is booster shots. I mean, it's a bit insane to think about getting a third shot when even getting one or two has been so hard for so many people around the country. But how are we in this place where we're thinking about booster shots right now?
So our supply, thankfully, is much better of the vaccines now. And we're at the point where, you know, in most cases, people who want to get double dosed can get access to the vaccine. And then in late October, the Therapeutic Goods Administration gave the Pfizer vaccine provisional approval for a booster shot for those aged 18 and over in Australia. So that means that Pfizer has to continue clinical trials examining the efficacy of the booster shot. That's what provisional approval means. They need to submit ongoing evidence from those trials to be reviewed regularly by the TGA, the Therapeutic Goods Administration.
Why is there a need for ongoing clinical trials? I mean, other countries around the world are much further ahead than us in terms of their vaccine rollout. Surely they have the data on whether they work or not.
Yeah, definitely. So the experts and administrators here would have been looking at that data, definitely. But even those countries that have already rolled out the booster shot, we're probably still only hitting around the 6-month mark from when those boosters were rolled out, maybe a bit less even. So we still don't really know the long-term efficacy of that booster shot. You know, will it mean that you never need another booster shot? Will it mean that you have protection for several years? We just need more data on that. So we know it's safe and that it's effective at boosting the immune response to protect you against the virus. We just still don't quite know how long it lasts.
So how are these booster shots going to be rolled out? Is it going to be a similar situation with priority groups and then the rest of the population?
So you're eligible for a booster shot if you are over 18 and you are 6 months out from your second dose of the vaccine. So initially, they were prioritised to aged care in Victoria. Victoria still had a lot of virus in the community and still does as we speak. So New South Wales Health state-run clinics started offering the booster from last week. The Federal Health Minister, Greg Hunt, has said that he'll begin aged care and disability as a priority. So that began immediately after approval of the booster dose. But interesting, it's a slightly different scheme for those who are immunocompromised. So maybe people with cancer, for example, whose body doesn't respond quite as well to the first two doses of the virus. Those people have been eligible for longer for the booster shot. And I guess it's not really considered a booster in some ways for those people. They need the dose to get up to an acceptable level of immune response. And even with that booster dose, you know, it might not necessarily be as effective.
You mentioned that this is the situation for people over 18. What about kids? What's recommended for them in booster shots?
So the Australian Technical Advisory Group on Immunisation, known as ATAGI, says that booster doses are not currently recommended for those aged under 18 years old. So in this age group, severe COVID-19 is really uncommon anyway. So vaccines are really there to protect against severe disease and hospitalisation. And so the benefit from booster doses is likely to be pretty small in this age group because the first two doses generate a really strong immune response in kids anyway. On top of that, there are only really limited data on the safety of repeated mRNA, so Pfizer vaccine doses, in this age group. But the TGA has received part of an application from Pfizer to have the vaccine used in children between the ages of 5 and 11 approved. So they're considering the data for that, and we'll see what they recommend in terms of vaccinating that age group.
What types of vaccines can be used as a booster? Is it just Pfizer?
So Pfizer is recommended as a single booster dose, irrespective of the primary brand, I suppose, of COVID-19 vaccine that you've had. AstraZeneca can also be used as a booster dose if you've had your first two doses of vaccine as AstraZeneca and you've had, a severe reaction to the Pfizer vaccine. So the government also expects that Moderna, which is a very similar vaccine to Pfizer, will apply to the TGA for approval to be used as a booster dose too. So really, I think the main vaccines that will be used for boosters are, for now, Pfizer, and then going forward, Moderna as well. But if you've had two doses of AstraZeneca, you can get a third dose of that too.
I suppose an outstanding question whenever we talk about vaccines is, what about the variants? Will these booster shots help us if a new variant, Delta plus plus plus, pops up?
Yeah, it's interesting because we had that fear with the Delta variant that these vaccines we had available wouldn't be as protective. But the head of the TGA, Professor John Skerritt, said that the good news is that a few months ago, even though we were really worried about having to produce different vaccines because of variants, it seems that even with the severity of Delta and how dominant that strain has become globally, we haven't really needed to change the vaccines we have or, you know, do anything exceptional to get protection. So especially with a booster, it seems that the vaccines we have should do the job. But of course, you know, things change. Who knows if that will be the case in several years. But I think we can be pretty happy with the vaccines we have.
What does this mean for proof of vaccination? Are they going to have to update your vaccination certificate to show that you've had three shots instead of two? And does it create this kind of tiered system between people who haven't had a booster shot versus people who have?
Yeah, it's another interesting question and different responses depending on where you work, where you live. I mean, the federal health minister, Greg Hunt, said at this stage, a booster shot won't be considered mandatory for being able to travel overseas and return to Australia or to be considered fully vaccinated by the federal government. Having said that, there are some countries overseas that do require that booster shot to get in. So even though you won't need it to get back into Australia, it's important to keep reading the travel advice for the country you're going to. But, you know, he does encourage every Australian who's eligible to get the booster shot.
But we stand ready to do whatever we can to assist the Commonwealth government in rolling out those boosters.
But then a few weeks ago, the Victorian Premier, Daniel Andrews, said,
"This is again why the vaccinated economy is important, because those shots are going to be just as important as the first and second. That's why it'll be in everybody's interests, the health and safety, for the health system, and of course to continue participating in that vaccinated economy, you will need to have a booster shot. But there's time for us to talk through all that, and we will."
Participating in what he calls the vaccinated economy. So at the moment in Victoria, you have to be fully vaccinated to do lots of things, go to the pub, get a haircut, that kind of thing. He said in future, to participate in that vaccinated economy, you may have to maintain your vaccination status through a booster shot. So you might have to get the third dose. Nothing official confirmed, but he's implying that that might be the case.
So it'll be about the maintenance of your vaccination status.
So basically, if you can, a booster is better than no booster at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly am looking forward to getting a booster as soon as I'm eligible in a few months' time. So, yes, especially if you want to really travel, you know, and go to places like Austria, Croatia, they're some of the countries requiring three doses. So we might see more countries following that. So just to be safe and just to be able to participate and to know that you're protecting the people around you as effectively as you can, the boosters are a really good idea.
That's it for today. Thanks to Melissa Davey for her time. You can find her reporting on both booster shots and rapid antigen testing at theguardian.com, and we put some links to some key articles on the full story page as well. This episode was produced by Ellen Leibeater and Joe Koning, who also did the sound design. The executive producers of Full Story are Gabrielle Jackson, Miles Muttignoni, and myself, Laura Murphy-Oates. Okay, catch you tomorrow.